I think it may be the earliest show I've ever done that's not Olympics related. That wasn't at something like, you know, 4 in the morning in Sochi or in Beijing or something. 8 a.m. pregame show with the man himself, Josh Grant. But even Josh could not lock up Casey Jacobson. Ah, there's the giggle. The man you see on a regular basis, daily, weekly, bringing it hard for the Pac-12 networks, their college basketball analyst, and also with Fox Sports, Casey Jacobson, longtime Stanford star. I love a guy who just who can shoot it and doesn't mind telling people as he's going down the court that what he just did to you, and then he just lit up. There's a lot of hurt feelings in Germany. A lot of people. Like their careers were crushed by what Casey did to them, and when he just lit it up in Germany, right? Let's be honest.
Although I would say that I was a lot more brash in college than I was at a professional level. I feel like I've mellowed out. I matured a little bit. I grew up. But yeah, I know a lot of people hated me in college, and I probably would have hated me too.
But you didn't care, did you? You're like, had a little bit of Leitner in you, didn't you? You had some Leitner.
No, I was all business, whether it was against the Utes or the Cougars or the UCLA Bruins. I wanted to cut out their heart and leave it at center court. That was my job.
I love that about you. And the fact, see, I fancied myself a shooter, too. And there's just something that comes with that territory that you gotta be a little cocky because everybody's trying to lock you up and push you around and all that, right? I mean, I'm serious.
Yeah, no. Your point is well taken in the fact that to be a good shooter, in college basketball, and certainly to make it to the professional level, you have to have confidence. I don't know of a single shooter that was worth his grain of salt that wasn't a little bit cocky. Now, that line, walking that line of being a jerk.
Like Marshall Henderson?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, he sprinted past that line. I tried to walk it a little bit better. But sometimes you do it well, and sometimes you don't.
All right, let me ask you, because I had a great visit with Bob Harris, for 40 years, the Duke play-by-play guy. I know you know him. And we got on the Leitner topic. And what do you think of Christian Leitner?
Well, I watched that ESPN 30 for 30
treasure
documentary. Yeah, and you know, obviously it didn't paint Leitner as a great guy, but. You know, just a different perspective for me because I was really young watching him play at Duke. All that he accomplished at Duke, and you know, we've already touched a little bit on it. He was so confident, and he was so much about winning that sometimes he rubbed people the wrong way. But you know what? If you look at all the geniuses in the world, whether they be business related or sports. Some of them were hard to get along with.
Yeah.
I mean, their genius is it rubs people wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's okay to me. For what Christian Leitner did for college basketball, for what he did for that Duke basketball program, they needed that. If Christian Leitner was a nice guy, I argue they don't win national titles. I mean, that to me, I believe that. Now, you can't have an entire team of Christian Leitners. That's what I learned when watching that. If Grant Hill was like Christian and Bobby Hurley was like Christian, then that would have exploded.
Right.
So you have one guy like Christian who's a monster athlete and just an SOB, a jerk, and then you surround him with guys like Grant Hill and Bobby Hurley, who's a nice competitor, and Coach K, and then you get a dynasty.
Right. And I know you use the term jerk advisedly because I guarantee you that and I got some perspective from Bob Harris about what practices were like. Coach K would sit back and, you know, he'd let Christian form that team. And you know, I'd argue at the end of that run, they might not have all loved each other, but there was respect up and down on that team. And I just the stepping on the guy and then hitting the shot, I mean, that says it all. All right, so no. we pivot to Duke and the Running Utes. Running Utes found out at Wichita. You know, you got on the road, you got to bring it, and sometimes you just got to fake it until you can figure out how to play physical. Post-entry passes not in the house that day. So now they take care. They come back. They have a week to get ready. They go to the Garden. Duke's not as physical. It might not be that much of a bang fest, but they still, the guards got to figure things out, and Jakob Poeltl has to kind of take over, I think, a little bit if he can.
Yeah, well, you're right. If he can, and if his Utah teammates can get him the ball.
Wasn't that unbelievable?
No, it was. But I expected that, which Utah State does that. They're a pressure defense team. And with Van Vliet and Ron Baker back healthy together, they're a menace. They're tough on the perimeter. And I knew that Utah's backcourt would struggle there. But the book is being written on Utah right now. I mean, against the best teams, you are going to try and take Utah's perimeter game away, make them uncomfortable, make it difficult for them to even throw the ball to their best player. And so this is something that Utah is going to have to deal with. And I'm sure Larry Piskowiak is working on post-entry passes, being able to catch the ball in the perimeter, rip through contact, either get to the basket or create the proper angle to get it to Jakob. And then once they throw it down to Jakob, you know, this is going to be interesting. Marshall Plumlee is big, strong, physical. It might be nice to watch Jakob and Marshall battle one-on-one instead of getting double-teamed every time. I'm very interested to see how they play him.
That was the sense. Bob Harris was not thinking that Coach K was going to do a lot of double-teaming unless, you know, Pirtle got going a little bit. He was going to see what they could do, and that's going to be interesting. How important is a point guard in when you're trying to build a program? DeLon Wright goes on to Toronto, and it's interesting when Toronto picks up Corey Joseph and Kyle Lowry, there go DeLon Wright's minutes, but he's learning from two studs, and so now the Utes are in a transition at the point. Can you develop that over a season and be ready in February and March, or how much catch up does Utah's Coach K have to do?
Oh, he has a lot, and the point guard position is the most important. I compare it to a quarterback in football, or maybe a quarterback in football is slightly more important the way that the game is changed now and the rules have changed in football. But in basketball, if you're not solid at the point guard position in college basketball, you are in deep, deep trouble unless you have some amazing scorers down low and on the wing. And, you know, Coach K, that we knew going into Utah's Coach K,
right,
in this conversation, got to clarify.
I ran into that.
To just call him Larry. Larry, you know, I knew going into this season that it would be an issue. Now, Lorenzo Bonham, to me, has been a better basketball player than I thought. But he is not a point guard. He is not a creator. He is not a good passer. It's actually one of the weakest parts of his game. I like almost everything else about him, but he doesn't make other guys better. And so now we're having to ask Brandon Taylor to do that. And he's a good passer, but he too is small and not a guy that can just break anybody down and get into the lane and create. So there is a void there that has to be filled. I doubt they can just fill it with one guy. It's not just going to be Isaiah Wright, not just going to be Bonham. It's going to have to be a collective effort. That is not ideal, especially when you're going up against a Duke basketball team who's very, very athletic. But it can be done. They're going to have to shoot well from the perimeter on Saturday.
And just from program building, and you know you've been there and back. Is this one of those things that Larry, in his quiet moments, is saying, you know, dang, we should have probably brought in another point. We thought now I'm waiting for these guys to get it, and maybe their DNA isn't point yet. They don't have a point on the team.
Yeah, I'm sure he's wishing. There's a lot of coaches that
are
wishing that he would have recruited some other superstar player. Look, it's difficult to find point guards. And let me also say this. I think DeLon Wright ruined it for everybody else at Utah.
Great point.
He came from the College of San Francisco. He made it look easy. Look, to me, you see transfers from junior college all across the country. DeLon picked up the point guard position and was a leader for that team almost out of the gate. Now, it took him 2 years ago, maybe a month and a half. That is so rare.
Right.
Normally, JC guys aren't even hitting their stride until maybe the second half of conference play. And so it's possible that Lorenzo Bonham is going to develop, you know, better playmaking skills, but he's not there yet. You know, maybe we can talk about that in February and talk about how this Utah team will be able to compete for a Pac-12 championship and make an actual tournament run because Bonham's improving. But right now, I don't see it.
What do you love about Duke? I know you have a special thing for Grayson Allen, don't you?
Of course I do.
He's you.
Yeah, he is kind of like me. He's a little bit better leaper.
He can hammer on people,
But certainly when I watch him play, he has a scorer's mentality and a toughness, a competitive. That reminds me a little bit of myself. Plus, I was a white boy, too.
Which,
draw comparisons. But talking about Grayson Allen, you know, he's had one bad game this year, and that came on a big stage. It was against Kentucky. He was 2-for-11 in that game. And, you know, people said after the game, oh, he was exposed by Kentucky's athleticism, couldn't get a shot off. You know what he did the next game against VCU? 30 points.
Yeah.
You know what he did the very next game after that against a pretty good Georgetown team? 32 points on just 12 shots. Okay, he's convinced me. He's proved to me everybody can have a bad game, but he has bounced back, and he needs to be in the top. To me, he's a top four, top five player of the year candidate in college basketball. He's leading their team.
I think that's it. Thank you for that, putting him up there and out there for Ute fans to keep an eye on. The white guy who's going to be running around, and he's never met a shot he didn't love, and I respect that about him. And he has the opportunity. He'll have the forum to be one of those best in the country, and certainly a guy that the Utes have to find early. You don't want to let him get going in the garden. The loss of Jefferson obviously is something that hurts Duke, and that's good for the running Utes. And what else about Duke presents problems for Larry Krystkowiak's team?
Yeah, you mentioned Emil Jefferson. He's out with a foot injury. He's out indefinitely, and they were already a thin front court. And that's why I mentioned the matchup between Marshall Plumlee and Jakob Poeltl. If Plumlee gets in foul trouble at all, I don't know what they're going to do. They're probably going to go into a zone. Or
Chase Jeter, maybe, the 6'10" freshman. We haven't seen much of him.
So TK, last game they started Marshall Plumlee and four guards. And so that's something that they could do against Utah as well, because, you know, Kyle Kuzma can be guarded by a perimeter player in theory. Or they can go to Chase Jeter, whom you mentioned. And if your audience isn't familiar with Chase Jeter, he's a 6'10 freshman from Las Vegas. He's not even 200 pounds, okay? So this is a kid that needs a year of college basketball in the weight room to be ready. He's going to be a factor next year, but because of the injury to Emil Jefferson, they might throw him into the fire, although last game he hardly played at all and didn't make a big impact. So the other guy I have to mention for Duke, though, is Brandon Ingram. Brandon Ingram might be the longest player you've ever seen, and but he's a perimeter player who's masquerading as a four-man right now because they're so thin. But he had close to 30 points and 14 rebounds in their last game. He is more than capable of going off.
Supposedly a top 10 pick in the NBA draft coming up already. They're saying he's that good.
You got to see this kid. He's just gangly arms for days, man.
Casey Jacobson, college basketball analyst for Fox and Pac-12 Network, at CJacobson23 on Twitter. Want to make sure you follow him. What do you when you think about Mike Krzyzewski? Just throw out whatever, you know.
The greatest of all time. I mean, John Wooden is considered the greatest basketball coach of all time, and I don't want to compare the two.
Yeah, different eras.
I never got to compete against John Wooden's teams, and I have only watched them on documentaries and YouTube videos and stuff like that. I got to meet him before he passed away, which was an honor for me. But Coach K is the best that I got to compete against. And he is the best modern-day basketball coach that I've ever seen. And what's most impressive about me is not the fact that he's won more than 1,000 games, which is just flat-out ridiculous. It's the fact that he continues to evolve. I mean, he was doing it with Christian Laettner and Bobby Hurley in Grant Hill when guys were staying 3 and 4 years. And now he's doing it with one and done.
Mm-hmm.
Every single year he's having to reload, and yet here they are, again, top five in the country. And, you know, everybody's favorite to make another Final Four. Truly remarkable.
Two quick things before we cut you loose. You've played in the Garden. We heard Mike Montgomery, who coached Larry Krystkowiak, last night during the Savannah State game, brought up the point I brought up when I was on with Bob Harris, how, have you ever been in the Garden when the circus is in town? It reeks. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I've been in multiple NBA arenas with the circus. He's either like coming or just leaving, and yes, it smells like manure.
Yeah.
Hey, absolutely. But
yeah, okay.
My first college game of my career was at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, man.
The NIT, and we played against Duke, as a matter of fact. That was my very first game, my freshman year at Stanford, and we beat Dukies when Shane Battier was a junior that season.
So that's a great memory, and you love. I mean, the Garden is the Garden. It's a little bit, they've made some renovations, and it's a little more glitzy. But it's kind of a little bit dumpish now compared to the other, like the Barclays and around all the great arenas around the country, the new ones. But it's still the Mecca, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Who cares about the locker rooms? Who cares about the concession stands? I surely don't. I want to play in a basketball arena that has tradition, where some of the great titans of all sports, not just basketball, but Ollie and Frazier were there, but all the musical acts throughout the entire world.
Pete Maravich hung 40 on Georgetown or something, I think.
Ooh, I love me some Pete Maravich.
Oh, yeah. I was a kid up in the blues section when Pistol came in, and it was ridiculous. Last question, what do you make of this? I mean, it's everywhere, and it's really about this generation. The bench mob at Monmouth. Monmouth goes in, hammers Georgetown on the road. Monmouth has a bunch of Jersey kids who are tough, and they can shoot. They've already won at UCLA. We ran down yesterday. But the bench guys who aren't playing, they're getting more pub with this recreation of Adam and all these stunts. What do you make of that?
I love it, love it, love it. But you know what? This could only happen under certain circumstances. It can only be a small school, a mid-major Cinderella story.
Yep.
If you're a big program, it would be more annoying than anything else. And so you got to be winning, okay?
Absolutely.
And what they're doing, the celebrations are awesome. They even have their own Twitter account, Monmouth Bench. It's amazing, and I love it. They recreated the Sistine Chapel the other night.
The recreation of Adam. The fingers point like Michelangelo's work on the top of the chapel there. And now they have other ones. They already have some other ones they're going to break out. But like you said, they better win.
Yeah, they better win, but they are, and that's the thing, is we got to remember that all these bench celebrations are coming from the fact that their on-court product is pretty darn good.
They've exactly.
Four power conference teams, and if your audience isn't familiar with Justin Robinson, they should be. He's a junior, he's a top 20 scorer in the country. He's only 5'8" tall. I think I was 5'8" when I was about fourth grade, and this kid is just going out and lighting everybody up, leading their team. I love watching
Can Monmouth win some watching. Tournament games?
Yeah, the bigger
question: can they get an at-large bid if they don't? If they get upset in their tournament, I guess so. They have a great resume now.
Okay, I would say it is possible. Yes, it is possible, but they have to either make their conference championship. They have to finish second. If they don't win their conference, and they're in the MEAC, MEAC conference,
right?
If they don't win it, they got to finish second. If they finish third or fourth, I think it eliminates them.
Right, I agree. But to me, it's added a whole new twist on this early college basketball season. Great stuff once again. I could go on for a long time talking shooting and stinky gardens and stuff. Thanks for the insight on the running Utes and Duke. That's going to be fun. What game are you doing? Where are you going this weekend?
Oh, I was doing some studio work for FS1 for their Big East coverage, and then I'm actually taking my family out to Salt Lake. We're going to do a little skiing.
Awesome.
Because I have Utah's next game on Tuesday after they play Duke on Saturday. I have them Tuesday against Delaware State. So
hey, let me throw this out. If you're in town and you got like 15, 20 minutes in the morning on Monday or Tuesday, you know, we're right downtown. Come on up.
Come in studio? Absolutely. I'd love to.
Seriously.
All right. I always enjoy talking hoops, and I always appreciate you two having me on the show.
No, it's a blast. I'm not going to hold you to it. We'll text back and forth if you got a few minutes. I know it's a family thing. I'm not going to bother you about that. Merry Christmas. Hopefully we'll see you soon, but definitely enjoy anytime you can join us on TK in the Midday. Casey Jacobson.
All right. Thank you.